pretty quickly. The first item on today's agenda, Health and Human Services Legislative Policy Review, Sean Parker and Amy Jo Johnson. Lady and gentlemen, please come forward, or you may speak from your seat, whichever is more convenient for you. Okay, you'll speak from there. Go ahead, Mr. Parker.
Good afternoon, committee members, chairs. Ms. Johnson and I are with the Research Division, and we've been asked to provide an overview of substantive legislation that would impact the offices and divisions and programs that operate under the Department of Health and Human Services. What I have for you is a handout, and basically what we're utilizing here is the summaries publication that our division will produce, again, culled for those specific pieces of legislation. What it will have is the bold short title, which was the final enacted short title, and at the end of the paragraph or the end of the summary would be the initials of the staff person who produced it. My intent today is to go through very briefly, again, just providing perhaps a summary of the summary, and it should not take but 5-10 minutes at the most. We broke down the summaries into four different sections or multiple sections. The first would be things that relate to licensure and inspection and regulation by the department. The first bill, House Bill 618, was an act that would direct the secretary to dissolve and then reestablish a NC TOPS advisory committee. I directed the secretary to review the national accrediting bodies for their policies and procedures and make sure that the state was not duplicating that for providers. It was to allow that private sector development of a data warehouse for provider records there. If there was going to be an investigation of a provider, that the department could go to the warehouse instead of to the provider directly. The next bill was relating to the department's penalty and provisions section, and this was an agency bill. And what it did was it attempted to make the provisions and administrative penalties for nursing care facilities, adult care facilities, and facilities with people with mental illness, developmental disability, and substance abuse service to be in line. So basically it took the penalty procedures and amounts and for those three types of regulated facilities, conformed those. There were two bills relating to the time or the of an inspection for nursing homes that were who had received a sanitation grade of A and were CMS certified. The food service inspection that was to occur either two or four times a year has been changed to do it two times a year, and then after 1 year, a single time during the year. There also was a bill, House Bill 808, which authorized the department to waive the adult care annual inspection if it was a four-star rated adult care home. And it just gave the division the authority to waive it and still requires inspections every 2 years, but the annual inspection doesn't have to take place. Related to other facilities, there was a revision to the adult care home process for discharge. What the bill did was establish a procedure for the discharge of adult care home residents and provide an appeals process for adverse discharge decisions. And finally, in the realm of mental health licensure, prior to House Bill 509, if two or more residents lived in a facility and received home care services, the residency had to be licensed. What House Bill 509 did was extend that so that three people could live in the residency and it would not be required to be licensed. The next area of law was that relating to mental health. There were two bills relating to 1915 BC waiver. The first was Senate Bill 316, which did three separate things. First, it removed the restriction on expanding the waiver sites. It was previously had a temporary restriction of two waiver sites, and this expanded to allow additional expansion, as well as there was a restriction on PBH or Piedmont Behavioral Health LME from merging with other LMEs. Senate Bill 316 removed that prohibition. It had two other things, one relating to medical records. Senate Bill 316 allowed state facilities, state-operated facilities, to release protected health information for third-party billing purposes. That would be allowed under HIPAA, but under our statutes, it was not allowed. This provided that permission to state facilities. And then it also made for how fund balances should be distributed when an LME is dissolved for future LME mergers. The statewide expansion of the 1915 BC waiver was the larger of the waiver bills and basically directed the department to proceed with the restructuring of management responsibilities for the delivery of services in mental health, DD, and substance abuse services by expanding the waiver. A few worthwhile or noteworthy things for time frames for implementation: that the department had till August 1st to identify which LMEs currently could operate in 1915 BC waiver based on the RFA they released last spring. There was also a reporting requirement by October 1st. This oversight committee should be receiving a strategic plan for implementing the expanded waiver plan. And as it relates to LME catchment area, what's permissible catchment areas, by July 1, 2012, an LME's program must be at least 300,000 people. And then by July 1 of 2013, an LME's catchment must be at least 500,000 people. Two other bills in mental health. The first was enacting the first evaluation program, and that basically codified the first commitment pilot program, which allowed specially trained clinical social workers and master's level psychiatric nurses and certified clinical addiction specialists to conduct the initial examination for the involuntary commitment process. And then finally, there was a temporary provision that gave the secretary an authority to transfer mental health beds between a single count. I guess it would have to go to a hospital authority within a single county LME, and they must have also met the other needs. But what it did was it allowed for this to take place outside of a provision in the state medical facilities plan. In the next section, records and reporting requirements, I have four bills to identify. The first was to facilitate the statewide health information exchange. And basically, what that did was provide a voluntary uniform and regulated method of sharing individual identifiable health information among healthcare providers, health plans, and healthcare clearinghouses. While this is not operated by a state agency, it's actually a nonprofit that many of the state agencies deal with this type of information among each other, and so they certainly could utilize the health information exchange. Also related to medical records, there was a bill, Senate Bill 607, to conform medical record laws. And basically, again, it took areas of mental health law, public health law, as well as adult care home, home health and adult care home, their privacy laws, and tried to make them more conform to where they still all fit under HIPAA, but now they're a little closer, more uniform. The last two that I'm speaking to relate to some reporting requirements. House Bill 809 set up a statewide surveillance and reporting system for healthcare-associated infections and directed a report to the General Assembly on what efforts the state's making as far as the state plan on healthcare-associated infections. And House Bill 474 made some changes to the requirements for adult care home medication aides and supervisors, but also required the development for and guidelines for reporting outbreaks of communicable diseases and set up a reporting requirement for infection prevention requirements. Ms. Johnson will now speak to the remainder.
There were four bills that specifically addressed areas involving Medicaid. The first was Senate Bill 496, which outlined the provider screening requirements and categorical risk provider types as were required by federal law, applying to all providers enrolled in Medicaid and North Carolina Health Choice. The bill also implemented additional requirements for new providers relating to billing and fraud prevention. The department was authorized to establish a registry of billing agents, clearing houses, and alternate payees that submit claims on behalf of those providers. And DHHS was given the authority to suspend payments to providers under certain circumstances. The bill also addressed audits and outlined a process requiring a provider to undergo a prepayment claims review should there exist grounds for such a requirement, and the bill also provided for provider appeals. Also relating to Medicaid was Senate Bill 32. This imposed two annual assessments on hospitals payable quarterly and uses the revenue derived from those assessments to obtain additional federal Medicaid funds. The assessment proceeds and corresponding Medicaid funds will be used to address hospitals' costs of treating Medicaid recipients and uninsured patients and to generate additional money for the general fund to be used for the state's Medicaid program. Senate Bill 58 modified the 2010-2011 state budget by preventing a reduction in reimbursement rates paid to service providers in the Medicaid program and preventing a reduction in retirement system contributions to backfill the federal federal medical assistance percentage cut for the 2010-2011 fiscal year. Senate Bill 245 authorized local health departments, district health departments, and consolidated human service agencies to bill Medicaid through a clearinghouse or through the health information system. Lastly, there were three bills this session that involved pilots and studies. The first was a pilot also related to the Medicaid program. That was Senate Bill 307, which established a smart card biometrics program against Medicaid fraud. This is a 6 to 12 month pilot program, the North Carolina Smart Card Pilot Program, which will be evaluating the use of a smart card as a replacement for the current Medicaid assistance cards. And finally, there were two pilot programs that address adult daycare programs, adult care homes. The first, Senate Bill 512, directed the Department of Health and Human Services to conduct a pilot to assess the provision of overnight respite services in adult daycare programs. And House Bill 678 establishes a pilot program to address, through placement in specially designed adult care homes, the needs of individuals granted a medical release from the Department of Corrections and who have been determined to need personal care services and medication management. And that concludes our overview of enacted legislation this session relating to health and human services. Again, there's more in-depth information in your handout as well as the upcoming bill summary legislation, and certainly any one of us in research division would be happy to address any questions that one might have at a later time.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Ms. Johnson, we have about 5 minutes, 4 minutes left before we go to the next section of our agenda, and I'll open the floor up for any questions that anyone might have based on what we've discussed thus far. Are there any questions from members? Yes, Representative Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 9, the overnight respite pilot, where is that taking place? Where is with the adult care homes?
The bill required DHHS to select 2 to 4 currently successful certified adult daycare programs in which to conduct the pilot program, and I'm not aware if those have been selected yet at this time.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Esbitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have we gotten any kind of report yet on what the additional sites are for the Medicaid waiver or what the combinations are or what's going on there?
The Act required the selection or a determination to be made by August 1st on who would have met the RFA requirements. I've not seen a report. I know October 1st is the next date I'm looking for as far as when the strategic plan or the plan for implementation is due. I don't know necessarily that they were required to report which ones by August 1st, other than they were required to have identified who would. Maybe if someone from the department has can speak whether they have identified those.
Maybe Mr. Dixon, you have a comment?
Senator Nesbitt, I'll be covering that when we do the on the fiscal side, and I'll go over the sites that have been selected and give you an overview of that.
Further questions from members of the committee? Senator Bingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the, I don't know, I guess John or whoever answered, I'm, at any rate, the inmates released to adult care homes, how are those adult care homes chosen? Is that a volunteer? Do they volunteer to do that? Or when will they be notified, and how many inmates are we talking about?
I'm honestly not aware of how many inmates are going to be able to be eligible for this program. My understanding is that DHHS is selecting one adult care home to participate in the pilot program, so the numbers I would gather would be relatively small.
If anyone from the department is up to speed on that, you may address that. We're thinking that perhaps it was a unit in Harnett County, but we can't say with any specificity.